KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in False Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Akutan, Alaska.
Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, sometimes I think you might think that it's just me and Gary Marcus, the professor emeritus from NYU, talking about AI in a less than effervescent tone. But here now comes something from the president of the King's Bench Division, that's a court, in the UK. He issued a stark warning to lawyers about the serious consequences they'll face for misusing artificial intelligence before the courts. No, it's not he, it's she. Dame Victoria Sharp said, quote, "There's serious implications for the administration of justice and public confidence in the justice system if artificial intelligence is misused. In those circumstances, practical and effective measures must now be taken by those within the legal profession with individual leadership responsibilities, and by those with the responsibility for regulating legal services. Those measures must ensure that every individual currently providing legal services, were qualified to do so, understands and complies with their professional and ethical obligations and their duties to the court if using artificial intelligence. For the future, the profession can expect the court to inquire whether those leadership responsibilities have been fulfilled." The court's hearing was based on its inherent power to enforce duties that lawyers owe to it in relation to two matters where fake cases were put before the court. Last month, one justice said that in citing five fake cases, the behavior of a pupil at court and lawyers at Haringey Law Center in London had been improper, unreasonable, and negligent. And he also ordered them to pay wasted costs. The case involved a written statement from the claimant in a $122 million lawsuit that featured 45 fake citations or fake quotes from real cases. The Chief Justice said AI is likely to have a continuing important role in the conduct of litigation in the future, but its use must take place with an appropriate degree of oversight, unquote. Well, that costs time and money, doesn't it? The time and money that AI was supposed to save. Hello, welcome to the show. We'll be right back.
necessarily mercenary. So we're all unnecessarily mercenary.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this right here edition of the show. And while we're on the subject of AI, here's Ralph.
AI to the rescue, smarter every day. From work to play, it leads the way. Innovation, creation, it's here to stay. AI makes life better. Hip, hip, hooray.
He puts the hip in hip, hip, hooray, doesn't he? The Auschwitz Museum has asked a Facebook page to stop AI generating pictures of Holocaust victims using real names and stories. In a post on X, ain't that ironic? The Auschwitz Memorial Museum says that a Facebook page called 90s History is not making the pictures as a tribute, instead calling it a profound act of disrespect to the memory of those who suffered and were murdered at Auschwitz. Adding those images undermines the integrity of history itself, they say. Quote, what makes this particularly troubling is that their posts copy real content, including names, dates, and biographical facts taken directly from our posts. If they paired this information with fabricated AI-generated images, then mislead viewers. These are not real photos of the victims. They are digital inventions, often stylized or sanitized, that risk turning remembrance into fictionalized performance, unquote. The museum shared the example of Leon Gorfinkel, a French Jewish boy deported to Auschwitz in 1942 and was killed. The memorial tweeted a picture of him which 90s History copied, except for the picture which they swapped for an AI version of the young victim. Memorial says the history of Auschwitz is a well-documented story. Altering its visual record with AI imagery introduces distortion, no matter the intent. Using made-up images, no matter how poignant they seem, is a dangerous distortion of facts, unquote. The attempts to contact the 90s History page was unsuccessful, but a brief scroll through its feed shows an onslaught of AI imagery. What's strange is in many cases there are already plenty of real photos online of the person depicted. The page uses an AI version. Anyway, hip, hip, hooray. And now.
Looks like must close.
Well, we know he's in the news this week, but here's more news you probably haven't heard yet about him. Elon Musk has shared a post containing a photographer's specialist images and passed them off as AI-generated to advertise his AI image generator, Grok. Grok! To add insult to injury, the photographer, Charles Brooks, says his X account was then restricted after he responded to some of the comments underneath Musk's post with those pictures. Brooks, you see, takes unique photos of the inside of musical instruments and is the only photographer in the world to have ever captured the inside of an intact violin. There was these photos that were posted by Eric Jiang, but edited so that people were inside of them. Musk then shared Jiang's post with the caption, "Generate images with Grok," implying that the images were created by his AI image generator, Grok. Quote, I find it a little bit frustrating because, as hopefully most of you know, all these instrumental photos that I take are of real instruments, Brooks says. They're not AI generated at all. He continues. He believes that Jiang lifted his photos and used Grok to composite people into his photos. That's what Elon then went and shared. Both Musk and Jiang shared Brooks' photos without credit, although Jiang did credit Brooks in a subsequent comment underneath, which Brooks says he finds, quote, disingenuous. I'm not against people sharing my images, he says. I love that you guys enjoy these images and want to share them with your friends. He says he doesn't even mind people editing his images, but he thinks a visible credit is the right thing to do. Musk shared those images to his 220 million followers on the platform without credit and with the Grok watermark logo on them instead. And then, to make matters worse, Brooks says his X account was restricted when he responded to comments that said his images were AI-generated. Brooks says he has no issue with AI, but rightly points out that image generators can only produce pictures similar to ones that have already been included in its training data. In fact, when Grok users asked it to generate an image of the inside of an instrument, they were left disappointed. And Elon Musk has a smog-belching data center in Memphis, Tennessee. And it's catching heat, this time from the NAACP, which urges local authorities in Memphis to halt operations and fine the startup for what it sees as a clear violation of the Clean Air Act. The Clean Air Act! In a letter to the County Health Department and Memphis Utility, Electric Utility, the NAACP argues their failure to act on XAI's ongoing use of unpermitted gas turbines to power the facility's 200,000 NVIDIA GPUs was a threat to community health. Quote, the message that the health department and the utility have sent to the community is that billionaires matter more than the taxpayers and residents who live there, said the NAACP. Located outside a historically black neighborhood in South Memphis, the data center's extensive use of mobile gas turbines has drawn ire from residents and environmental groups who raised the alarm over their impact on air quality and community health. As late as April, the Southern Environmental Law Center revealed that XAI, that's the AI outfit owned by Elon Musk, had deployed 35 gas turbines to power the facility, while the local utility completed work on a pair of 150 megawatt substations. It's estimated that the nitrogen oxides produced by these generators could cost county residents upwards of $18 million in health-related expenses and $100 million or more for residents within the affected smog range. Those are great for quick sausage cooking. In May, the Memphis Chamber of Commerce has served as XAI's mouthpiece for issues regarding the Colossus data center, according to the British Tech Journal. The Register announced that XAI would remove roughly half its temporary gas turbines by mid-July. However, even after the second substation is completed, XAI plans to get permits for 15 turbines to supply backup power on a permanent basis. Because, you know, that AI, it eats electricity. The NAACP argues that XAI deliberately chose to deploy large numbers of mobile turbines instead of constructing one large one in order to circumvent the law. By using mobile generators that can be towed away when no longer needed, XAI can avoid permitting requirements so long as they're used for fewer than a year. However, the NAACP says the district has yet to cite any legal justification for the exemption for the mobile turbines or why it has punted the issue to the Environmental Protection Agency. They're in a good shape to receive punts these days. The NAACP also argues that the utility flouted state open meeting laws by not holding public hearings on the facility until after the facility was fully operational. Well, locating belching operations, belching smoke containing chemicals of one kind or another in locations right near historically black neighborhoods, that never happens in this country. News of Musk love. It's already a little cold in here. Oh, it must be a crypto winter. the Taiwanese cryptocurrency exchange BitoPro disclosed they had suffered a theft from one of their hot wallets, which they said occurred during a system upgrade in which they were transferring assets between wallets. Well, that's where it could happen. This is from Web3IsGoingJustGreat.com. The theft was originally noticed by a crypto sleuth, ZachXBT, who observed a suspicious transfer of around, you know, $11.5 million in crypto assets on May 8th. By the way, they value the crypto assets in dollars. The funds sold on decentralized exchanges and then laundered through various cryptocurrency mixing services. BitoPro originally only told customers that the platform was offline for maintenance, but disclosed the theft on June 2 after ZachXBT published his findings. Oh, it's a crypto winner. And now, the U.S. electricity grid is likely to be highly constrained and less stable by 2030, 5 years from now. Check your watches. Data centers aren't helping. This from a company called Snyder Electric. It's an infrastructure business. It calculates there will be just enough grid capacity to power all expected electricity demand through that year. But the safety margins are set to become increasingly thin. As the end of the decade approaches, some regions are likely to come dangerously close to a shortfall of energy. This reported by the Register. Schneider used forecast data and metrics supplied annually by the North America Electric Reliability Corporation, your NERC, by U.S. regional transmission operators, your RTOs, and independent system operators to gauge the level of grid capacity and safety margins. It then analyzed how well it might accommodate all projected demand, including that from data centers, to use all that electricity to run all that AI. The report says the grid is now experiencing a surge in energy requirements following a lengthy period of little growth or even a decline. That was due to systems becoming more efficient. That's a thing of the past. This echoes an earlier report from Bain and Company. Remember them? They claimed energy companies had been caught on the hop by the unexpected rapid increase in power requirements, which could outstrip supply in just a couple of years unless utilities are able to boost their energy generation by up to 26% in 2.5 years. Seven regions are the likeliest to have a risk of outages, rolling blackouts, voltage reductions, and price increases. They include some of the largest areas of the country, a large swath of the continental United States. Less danger of outages would be expected in California, New England, and New York, southeastern Florida, plus the area covered by the Midwest Reliability Organization. I like them. To be clear, Schneider says that in the high-risk regions, there will be expected to be sufficient grid supply to meet peak demand, but a lack of safety margin means that if the grid should experience an unexpected problem, those never happen, such as a large generator site suddenly going bluey, there may not be enough supply to meet peak requirement at that time. Not just data centers are to blame, despite numerous reports forecasting the booming demand due to AI. It's likely to see global data center energy use double in 5 years. Also in the firing line are EV adoption, manufacturing onshoring, and the ongoing electrification of devices and processes. We're learning, ladies and gentlemen, that electricity doesn't come free either, even, or maybe even especially, in this smart, smart world.
It's not unusual to be loved by anyone. It's not unusual to have fun with anyone. But when I see you hanging about with anyone, it's not unusual to see me cry. I wanna die. It's not unusual to go out at any time. But when I see you out and about, it's such a crime. But if I ever find that you've changed at any time, it's not unusual to find that I'm in love with you.
Direct from Bedminster, the country club's so nice I almost renamed it Mar-a-Lago North, but it cost too much to change the signs. This is your favorite president with another edition of Truth Social Audio, brought to you by Trump Bread. Getting cheaper, faster even than eggs. I'm not a stranger to disreputable people. After all, building in New York City doesn't involve a lot of angels. But this drug-addled Elon Musk is one for the books, if I read books. He's what happens when you give a drug addict a stupidly lucrative business. I know, just ask Don Jr. Elon, or as I'm starting to call him, Eloon, should never have been allowed to stay in this country. He came on a student visa and then quit school to open a tech startup. Ordinarily, you'd admire somebody who broke the law like that to help the American economy, which, thanks to the Democrats, was in a toilet the likes of which nobody has ever flushed. But he was probably higher than a Grateful Dead roadie. Now he's got a tunneling company that uses federal funds to build tunnels that experts say don't exist, unless they're built down near the center of the earth, which would overheat your engine before you got halfway to China. Speaking of cars, I bought one of his electric death traps, and after a couple of days of sitting in it, I decided this was not presidential material. If that's a self-driving car, I'm a self-electing president, which is not the worst idea in the world. When I told it to drive me around the White House, it told me we were already there. If I wanted a wisecracker on wheels, I'd put Rosie O'Donnell on roller skates. If Elon thinks he's going to continue to ride the federal gravy train to support his rockets that keep blowing up, he should remember that this administration is totally able to do that without him. The next time a so-called tech wizard shows up at a White House dinner, he better be speaking in an American accent. That would be hot. Talk to you then.
Truth Social Audio is also brought to you by Trump Watches. So much gold you might never see the hands. So long.
Like being low. green, green are her eyes. A million miles, a million miles.
Hey, don't you want to go down? Like some disgrace caused tonight. A million miles below their feet. A million miles.
From Santa Monica, this is Le Show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the godly. This from Malta. Yes, from the Times of Malta. A retired bishop said on live television there that he would urge abuse victims to forgive their perpetrator before going to the police. George Frendo, he until 2021 served as an archbishop of an Albanian diocese, was speaking during a program on a religious TV channel. Quote, the first thing I would say to a person who is hurt is to encourage them to forgive before telling them to go to the police. I tell them they have a right to report and seek justice, but the first thing is I'd encourage them to forgive. Unquote. Frendo was a part of a panel of four people, three of them priests, discussing the case of a parish priest who was sentenced to 20 months in prison last week for defiling an official's 15-year-old niece. Following the sentencing last week, the church apologized to the victim, thanked its safeguarding commission for handling the case, and said the Vatican stopped the man from his priestly ministry. The court reduced the original 42-month prison term on appeal, but on the television program, the panel criticized the way the accused was treated by the courts and the church. During the program, Father John Ferrugia slammed the Safeguarding Commission and the church for, quote, discarding its people instead of showing forgiveness. I was hurt by this. Come on. I went to the funeral of priest Sultana. Was shameful that they didn't even place a stole on his coffin, he said, unquote. Oh, yes, the stole is a priestly vestment that symbolizes the priestly ministry and spiritual authority bestowed upon them by the church and is traditionally placed on the priest's coffin when they die. Quote, no matter who the person is, you shouldn't discard him, even if he was a murderer. If the church is not showing the beauty of forgiveness, it too must convert. Unquote. The Catholic Church does teach Christians to forgive even the most serious transgressions, but not instead of seeking justice. Malta, ladies and gentlemen, news of the godly. Now let's check in on our friend, the Adam. First, in Britain, members of Parliament have warned about the speed and the cost of cleaning up a nuclear waste dump in an area called Sellafield. That's a field you're going to sell, and raise concerns over a suboptimal workplace culture at the site. Members of Parliament's Public Accounts Committee urged the government and bosses that a sprawling collection of crumbling buildings in an area called Cumbria to get a grasp on the intolerable risks presented by its aging infrastructure. This from The Guardian. In a detailed report into the site, the Parliament Public Accounts Committee said Sellafield, was not moving quickly enough to tackle its biggest hazards, raised the alarm over its culture, and said the government was not ensuring value for money. The Guardian's nuclear leaks investigation a couple of years ago revealed a string of safety concerns at the site. You don't normally put those on a string, but including escalating fears over a leak of radioactive liquid from a decaying building, the Magnus Swarf storage silo, your MSSS, as well as cybersecurity failings and allegations of a poor workplace culture. Aside from that, the PAC, which heard evidence in March from Sellafield and its oversight body, the Nuclear Decommissioning Authority, found that the state-owned company had missed most of its annual targets to retrieve waste from several buildings, including the MSSS. As a result of Sellafield's underperformance, that silo will remain extremely hazardous for longer, the MP committee said. The ultimate cost of cleaning up the area, which contains waste from weapons programs and atomic power generation, has been estimated at $184 billion and could take more than 100 years. Yeah, that waste thing is no problem. Oh, and here's this. The Trump administration has proposed a $34 million cut for the Hanford nuclear site for the next fiscal year compared to the spending of last fiscal year. The proposal forwarded to Congress, which sets the budget, would provide around $2.9 billion for environmental cleanup work at the nuclear site in eastern Washington. Just cleanup, just nuclear cleanup, that's all. Hanford is the largest and most contaminated of the Department of Energy's nuclear defense cleanup sites. It fared better in the budget process than many of the other sites. Total cut proposed for those programs was about $400 million to a budget of $7.2 billion, with the need for spending at Hanford to increase to meet legal deadlines. Senator Patty Murray, Washington State Democratic Senator, and the vice chairperson of the powerful Senate Appropriations Committee, called the proposed Hanford budget, quote, utterly unacceptable and will be going nowhere as far as I'm concerned, unquote. She sounds like Elon Musk. Quote, Trump's proposal for Hanford would force us to fall behind on the cleanup mission at a critical time, leaving key milestones unmet and raising the cost on the cleanup in the long run, not to mention increasing the safety and environmental risks for the area, she said in a statement. The Washington State Department of Ecology, a Hanford regulator, estimated last year a budget of almost $4.7 billion would be needed in fiscal 2026 to meet legal deadlines for environmental cleanup of the site. So, you know, just a little waste has got to be cleaned up. Why hurry? Why spend money on it now when we could go to Mars? And now the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
The CEO of BarkBox, it's a company that offers a monthly subscription service for boxes of dog toys and treats, has issued a public apology for a, quote, disrespectful and hurtful, unquote, internal message that leaked on social media. A screenshot of the message that circulated on Reddit described the decision to immediately pause paid ads and lifestyle marketing pushes for the company's Pride Kit. Quote, while celebrating pride is something we may value, we need to acknowledge that the current climate makes this promotion feel more like a political statement than a universally joyful moment for all dog people, said the message. Continuing, if we wouldn't feel comfortable running a promotion centered around another politically charged symbol, like a MAGA-themed product, it's worth asking whether this is the right moment to run this particular campaign. Right now, pushing this promo risks unintentionally sending the message that we're not for you to a large portion of our audience. That's the way the message concludes. Mark Box confirmed to Business Insider the authenticity of the screenshot. The author of the message is unclear, but the founder and CEO, Matt Meeker, apologized for the disrespectful and hurtful message. In an Instagram post, quote, "I do not agree with the content of the message. It wasn't good. It doesn't reflect our values, and I'm deeply sorry that it happened," he said. "You want to state your values for us to..." Dateline Finland, the manager of Finland's women's national soccer team, has apologized after mistakenly calling up a 51-year-old with the same surname as a 23-year-old. That's who she was meant to select. Outi Saarinen called up former player Stina Ruskanen for the game against Serbia this week instead of Djurgården Garden defender Nana Ruskanen. The mistake was made too late for it to be corrected in time for the game, meaning Stina, the 51-year-old, was formally named to Finland's squad, and Nana, the 23-year-old, missed out. Nana was, of course, disappointed, but took the news very well, considering the circumstances, said the manager of the team. "I'm very sorry for the mistake." Stina, who last played for the Finnish national team 29 years ago, took the call up in good spirits. Quote, "I'm definitely ready if the call comes. Just yesterday I was playing in a hobby league match, so my game feel is good," she said. But after all, it's just soccer. Dateline London, MI5, that's the domestic spying agency in Great Britain, deliberately and repeatedly lied as it tried to defend its handling of a neo-Nazi agent who abused women. That's what the BBC told a panel of judges. The corporation argued the threshold for contempt of court proceedings and against MI5 and three individual officers had been met. Acting for MI5, an attorney issued an unreserved apology on behalf of the security service, but said the errors that had been made had not been deliberate. The three judges reserved judgment on the case until a later date. The case began in 2022 with an attempt to block the BBC from publishing a story about the neo-Nazi agent. It's become a major test of how the courts view the spy agency and the credibility of its evidence. Oh, that. Dateline Japan, a private lunar lander from Japan crashed while attempting a touchdown on the moon. Latest casualty in the commercial rush to the moon. Tokyo-based company iSpace declared the mission a failure several hours after communication was lost with the landee. Flight controllers scrambled to gain contact, but were met with only silence and said they were concluding the mission. Communication ceased less than 2 minutes before the spacecraft's scheduled landing on the moon with a mini rover. Until then, the descent from lunar orbit seemed to be going well. CEO and founder Takeshi Hakamada apologized to everyone who contributed to the mission. The second lunar strikeout for iSpace. 2 years ago, the company's first moonshot ended in a crash landing, giving rise to the name Resilience for its next lander. Resilience carried a rover. Company officials said it was too soon to know whether the same problem doomed both missions. Well, with two accidents in a row, they could take over from SpaceX. Dateline Vermont, Representative Becca Ballant, Democratic congressperson, apologized this week for controversial remarks she made about immigrant labor last week while speaking to constituents at a town hall event in the city of Newport. She is Vermont's sole U.S. representative in Congress. She was responding to an audience question about the immigration policy of the current administration under the felon-in-chief when she said that without legal immigrants, Americans were, quote, "not going to have anybody around to wipe our asses," unquote. "I want to apologize to anyone who was hurt by my comments, and I want Vermonters to understand that my position hasn't changed." She called her language sloppy and insensitive. She said, calling her remarks a mistake, she said she had intended to convey the central position, so to speak, immigrants have in the economy of Vermont and the United States. But there's more. Wake Forest baseball coach Tom Walter and Wake Forest itself apologized this week for what appeared to be an anti-gay slur caught by television cameras during an NCAA regional game against Tennessee. Quote, "I am very sorry for my outburst in frustration last night, and I recognize the hurt and disappointment it has caused," unquote Walter in a statement issued by the school, continuing, "I own the consequences, and I apologize to the University of Tennessee, to Wake Forest University, and the SEC and the ACC, it's the Southeast Conference and the Atlantic Coast Conference, for those of you who don't know your conferences." Walter said he has watched the video and doesn't remember the specific moment, but said, quote, "That language doesn't reflect my values or the standards of this program," unquote. I don't know if he's posted his values either. Wake Forest Athletic Director John Curry said that he was, quote, "surprised and deeply disappointed," unquote, and he spoke with Walter after the game and again the next morning. Quote, "I feel badly for those most hurt by such words," said the athletic director. "This incident is completely out of character for him and does not meet the standards of Wake Forest Athletics, Wake Forest University, or the Atlantic Coast Conference," unquote. The standards are posted right next to the values. Love Island USA contestant Yulissa Escobar apologized on Friday, that would be this week, for past use of a racial slur that got her kicked off the reality dating show scene in this country on Peacock. Well, broadcast in this country. I don't know about the scene. Quote, "I used the N-word ignorantly and not fully understanding the weight or history or pain behind it," the Miami native wrote on her Instagram. Quote, "I wasn't trying to be offensive or harmful, but I recognize now that intention doesn't excuse impact, and the impact of that word is real. It's tied to generations of trauma, and it is not mine to use," she said. Yes, she's never met Mark Furman. After the cast of the current season was announced at the end of May, recordings from Escobar's appearances on two separate podcasts resurfaced. Uh-oh. In the clips, she used the N-word more than once while discussing previous relationships. "Have you, Miss Escobar, ever had the opportunity to use the N-word in any capacity?" Her exit, that's just a little F. Lee Bailey imitation for the older people in the audience. Her exit in episode 2 was announced in a scene in which the show's narrator informed viewers simply, quote, "Yulissa has left the villa," unquote. Escobar went on to say in her post, "I was speaking casually in conversation, not thinking deeply or critically about what I was saying, but that doesn't take away from how wrong it was. The truth is, I didn't know better then, but I do now. I've taken the time to reflect, to learn, and to grow from that moment. I've changed a lot since then, not just in how I speak, but in how I show up, how I carry myself, and how I honor the experiences of others. To those who are disappointed or offended, I understand, and I am sorry. I apologize." She should be on TV, don't you think, with that command of the language? The Indiana Pacers have made a habit of erasing large deficits to steal games late this postseason. We're talking basketball apologies now. Game 1 of the NBA Finals was no different, but local fans watching on ABC in Indiana almost missed another come-from-behind win by their team and left one local TV station scrambling to explain why a teaser for their newscast almost cost fans the chance to witness another Pacers win. WPTA, ABC's affiliate in Indiana, apologized for cutting away from Thursday evening's game with just over a minute left in the fourth quarter. Heading into the final minute of the game action, the Oklahoma City Thunder were up by 3 points when Pascal Siakam blocked a layup from Shai say, Gilgeous Alexander. The Pacers dribbled the ball up the court. The station cut away to its local 11 p.m. Fort Wayne news tease. Quote, "We sincerely apologize for the brief interruption during the NBA game broadcast," said the vice president and general manager, Chris Fidel. He continued, "A technical issue in our master control inadvertently triggered the start of our 11 p.m. newscast. The issue was resolved within 24 seconds. Viewers were able to see the game-winning shot." One of the segments being teased was a Game 1 watch party. And the chief executive of one of the world's top consulting firms apologized to staff and admitted process failures in the company's decision to help design and run a controversial Israel-backed group that supported the work of the United Nations to deliver aid to the Gaza Strip. That's according to an email obtained by the Washington Post. Christopher Schweitzer, CEO of Boston Consulting Group, said his company had fired two partners involved in the Israeli-American effort and launched a formal investigation to ensure this does not happen again, in his words. Now quoting, "I deeply regret that in this situation we fell short of our own standards. They're up with the values and of the trust that you, our clients, and our broader communities place in BCG. I am sorry for how deeply disappointing this has been to many BCGers around the world." Unquote. The apology letter is the latest fallout from the decision by Israel and the United States to bypass the UN and channel the delivery of essential aid through the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, GHF, an opaque entity that has limited aid delivery to a few distribution hubs overseen by U.S. private security contractors in coordination with the Israel Defense Forces. Sounds like an Eric Trump kind of a deal. GHF came under immediate criticism from the UN and aid groups who expressed concerns about the independence of the program. Hours before the group began operations, the foundation's executive director, Jake Wood, resigned, saying its plans were, quote, "inconsistent with humanitarian principles." They're up there with the standards and the values. The rollout of the program has seen crowds of Palestinians come under gunfire while trying to collect food from Israeli-backed distribution hubs. Nearly 50 Palestinians have reportedly been killed, others wounded, like hundreds, near the Israeli-backed distribution center that the head of the UN Palestine Relief Agency has called, quote, "a death trap." There was an apology in there. I heard it. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And, ladies and gentlemen, just a semi-final thought. A lot of the talking heads and analysts and consultants and strategists and their associated followers are agonizing right now over the statistics that say young men have deserted the Democratic Party, at least in the last two elections. And yes, there's one obvious reason for that. Not necessary to go into it now. But the other would be, perhaps, that the last three Democratic presidents have never even mentioned raising the minimum wage.
This is a fine spring morning. It's everywhere for us to share. Just look what a fine spring morning can do. I've got a brand new feeling. When I think twice, it's awful nice. I hope everybody's feeling it too. Bees are getting busier, birds are getting dizzier, little girls and boys are getting quizzier, songs are getting singier, butterflies are wingier, and sure as shooting, spring is getting springier. as fine spring mornings. We're gonna be a family and spend every fine spring morning in
Ladies and gentlemen, that's it. That's the end. They've whistled the end of this edition of the show. Back next week, same time and same radio station, or on your audio device whenever you want it. And it would be kind of cool. It'd be hot if you joined me then. Tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego desk, to Pam Halstead, and to Thomas Walsh at WWNO New Orleans for help with today's broadcast. The email address for this program, your chance to get Cause I Talk t-shirts and a whole lot of other stuff. The playlist of the music, for example, all at harryshearer.com. And I'm on Blue Sky at Harry Shearer. The show comes to you from Sensory of Progress Productions, originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Change is Easy Radio Network. So long from the home of the homeless.
light for the harbor light. They only told me we were parting. The same old harbor light that once brought you to me. I watched the harbor light. How could I help it? Tears were starting. Goodbye to tender night beside the silvery sea. I long to hold you near and kiss you just once more. But you were on the ship and I was on the shore. Now I know lonely nights, for all the while my heart is harbor light will steal your love from me.